Authors are saying today they have written a book called The New I Do, Reshaping Marriage for Skeptics, Realists, and Rebels. It is a great book and a terrific topic, one that really should be talked about more because personally I think marriage is very important, but it can't be the old paradigm of marriage because often that just doesn't work anymore. And you end up being unhappy, getting divorced, and then there you go again. So we're going to talk about the seven alternatives to the marriage model and how to redefine matrimony for the 20th century. The authors of the book, Susan Peace Godwa, she is a therapist and as an author, she has written a few other books and she lives in San Francisco and she's appeared on the CBS Early Morning Show, the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, Washington Post, and Vicki Larson, who is a longtime journalist and a writer for the Huffington Post and the New York Times and is also an author of another book, has been with me before and we had a great time last time talking about a piece that she had written in the Huffington Post and then the women on The View discussed it and we talked about that and that was great fun and I want to welcome both authors today to Shannon's Corner. How are you?
Fine. Well, good morning, Shannon.
Well, thank you both for joining us. This is a terrific book. You have done a wonderful job here. I mean, this is just, it's a sociological perspective in many ways, but it's also something that really has to be talked about. Because marriage for most people is something you do because you should. And we look at it the old way. You fall in love, you get married, it's supposed to be happy forever after. Well, that just kind of doesn't work. Maybe that's not the reason we should get married. Maybe it is. But we certainly need to look at it different. What made you two look at think about this topic and write this book?
Hi, Shannon. This is Susan.
Hi, Susan.
And basically, it was very much out of the work that I was doing with divorcing people who kept telling me that they felt like they had failed. And with the statistics the way they are, it seemed to me that if that many people are failing, maybe it's actually the institution that needs to be tweaked rather than all these people who are doing something wrong.
Good point. So basically, the attempt to make marriage meet each person's needs, as you say in the book, is a setup for failure. So what you were seeing was the failure part of it. So when you look at the different ways we could do it, is it going in differently? And we're going to talk about the seven different models you have for marriage. But, you know, those that are in a long-term marriage, or those that are going into a marriage, is it what we think about before we go in the marriage that needs to be looked at, or once we're in it?
Well, I think it's both, and that's really a big point of the book, is that we do want people to start questioning some of these traditions that have gone on, such as till death do us part, and monogamy, and having longevity be the only measure of success. So before you go in, having conversations about that, and then when you're in the institution, when you're in that relationship, having conversations about that are ongoing about, is this what we want?
Yeah.
And Shannon, you brought up something that you said it's something you do, and that's another thing that we would like people to be aware of. It used to be that you had to really get married. Marriage was a kind of a duty. If you wanted to have sex, if you wanted to have children, if you wanted to live together with someone, you really needed to marry. Well, for the first time in history, marriage has very real competition. People have removed sex and children and living together and financial security away from marriage. And so therefore, you know, the big important question for people to ask themselves nowadays is, why am I getting married when I no longer have to? And that kind of frames, you know, the way that you marry and your purpose for marrying.
Yeah, that is a great question, because we do marry for different reasons. Often we don't want to think about it, or we feel we should marry because we really love the guy. And love, I think, is just not always a reason to get married. It's not often sustainable. I mean, there's a big difference between love and lust, and often what we think is love is lust. And even if that's not the case, we have to look at the whole bigger picture of the person when we marry. And you're right. I mean, it's very different. We don't have to get married. Many people have children out of wedlock. In fact, it's very much a trend to do. I don't think it's really great, because I don't think it's good for the children, which, you know, I mean, so in that case, what are some of the options that we could look at? Let's say you want to get married. What are some of the good reasons, do you think, to get married?
Well, I think that, you know, love is the one that we've focused on for so long now, and that's certainly not a bad reason to get married, but as you said, it's not necessarily sustainable at the level that people enter the institution with. So what we're saying is maybe it's okay to have purpose-driven marriages. We can get married to have financial security or to simply raise children, and then once the children are 18 or out of the house, then we can go our separate ways to, you know, basically to have a companion. There are lots of different reasons, and when I got married, somebody asked me, why did you get married? And I said, well, we love each other. And she said, right, but why did you get married? And my response was, I don't know. It's just what you do. So I was even unconscious about that, and this is my profession.
Right.
And, you know, that's I think going into something as great as marriage, we need to have more consciousness.
Yeah. No, listen, I think marriage is tough. I had a tough time getting married. I was 36, and really, my husband had to drag me to the altar, and I'm glad 20 years later that I was dragged there. But it was really hard for me. It took him, you know, years to convince me, because I was sure it was some landmine that was going to blow up in my face. 20 years later, it hasn't blown up yet. But I think we have to question that. I think we have, if you're not afraid to get married, then there's something wrong, because you have to be a little bit afraid, because we don't know what the future is going to bring. But if you look at everything very clearly, that, you know, why you're marrying the person, what you know about the person, what you want from the marriage, it has a better chance of succeeding. And I say succeeding, even if it fails, it might be a success.
Well, you know, you bring up an interesting point, Shannon, in that if you're understanding what you're expecting from marriage and your partner has the same expectations, then you're very aligned and you're matched, and you have a much better chance of having a successful marriage by your definition of success,
right,
because your expectations are aligned. And we found that in research. No matter the reason what people were marrying for, when they and their partner felt the same about what they were doing in that marriage, they were happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Do you think we have outgrown marriage? You talk about that in the book. Do you think we have?
I don't think that we have outgrown marriage, although I think more people are questioning it, and that's good. I think that's really good. When we had no choice, we really couldn't question
right.
it. But now we should be questioning it, because there are alternatives. Right now, you know, when you get married now, as always, the license gives you access to more than 1,000 government perks. It offers protection, and that is why a lot of people marry, because it does offer that, and living together will not offer that. And so unless something changes in society where we have other ways to protect caregiving, let's say, it's really the best protection that we have.
And it's the best protection for children, I think. And I think if you're going to make the commitment of having a child, I think it's easier to make the commitment of a marriage and do it with someone. I think it's awfully hard to do it alone. So I think that it's better for you and the children if you make it a teamwork. So I think that's always a good reason to get married. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about some of your 7 models for marriages: starter marriage, companionship marriage, parenting marriage, living alone together, and there's a few others. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the 7 new alternative models for marriage. So stay warm. We're back here in just a few on WTVQ. Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and thank you so much for joining us. And don't go anywhere, because we're talking about marriage today and a new way to look at marriage, whether you're just going into marriage for the first or maybe second or third time or whatever, or you are in a marriage. Maybe it's time to redefine it. Maybe it's time to change your marriage and look at it differently and maybe claim some power over it that you didn't have when you first went into it. And I suspect a lot of people, if you've been married a long time, went into it not knowing what you were getting, and maybe went into it with the old model, the old paradigm of looking at marriage, and maybe now you can, as I said, redefine it. We are talking with the authors of a wonderful new book called The New I Do: Reshaping Marriage for Skeptics, Realists, and Rebels. Susan Pease Godwa is a therapist and an author, and Vicki Larson is a journalist and a writer and also an author. And I want to welcome back both authors to our show. And before we took a break, I was going to talk about the different models in a marriage. And a lot of these are models that you think of before you go into them, right? But as we mentioned, you can change a lot once you're already in a marriage and redefine it. If you're both on the same page, do you have to be?
I think you do have to be, having this conversation about what you'd each like. And marriage is always a negotiation, but we're not always doing it consciously. So again, what we're suggesting in the book is that people have purposeful conversations about what it is that they want going into the marriage, and are they getting it once they are in the marriage? And if they're not, how can they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes, you know, things happen in a marriage. We talked to one woman from Australia whose husband became an invalid, and he could no longer be a sexual partner. With his graces, they opened up their marriage because he wanted that for her, but they remain in a committed marriage. And so sometimes something happens that precipitates a change in the marriage. And they could have divorced, but they decided not to.
Okay, and that would probably fall under the living alone together, or maybe not, or maybe just a companionship marriage. But those are things that happen, I think, after you've been married a long time, living alone together. Distance makes the heart grow fonder. Is that something that happens once the children are gone, sort of thing, once you have an empty nest?
It can happen at any time. It could happen even before one of the couples we interviewed in the book, they were, you know, young, newly out of college, looking for jobs. They couldn't find jobs in the same area. And so it wasn't really by choice, but they lived apart for the first year of their marriage until they could find jobs that were close by. But that wasn't a decision to do that. However, they learned that there were some really good qualities that happened from that, allowing each other some freedom and space and so on and so forth. So it doesn't really make a difference whether it should or shouldn't. It's just if that is what a couple is choosing to do. And a number of older people who have been married already and did that traditional thing and now are repartnering later in life, they have their own homes and they enjoy a little bit of their independence. So sometimes that, you know, drives the decision.
So reinventing your existing marriage could it's up to the couple, obviously, and it could happen at any time. But there's, as you mentioned, there's the new models to do. Now, some of the new models that I mentioned, starter marriage, companionship marriage, parenting marriage, living alone, covenant, and I'm just going to read them down, safety marriage, open marriage. These are, I think, pretty self-explanatory, except for the covenant marriage. I've never heard of a covenant marriage. What is that?
What's funny about the covenant marriage is it's actually a legal alternative in three states currently. And what the covenant marriage is basically, instead of saying I do, it's saying I really, really, really do. It's a it's a much higher threshold to get into, and it's harder to get out of. It is a somewhat religious-based marriage, and it is basically saying we don't take this lightly. We are going into this, and we want to make this work no matter what. And so it's definitely an alternative.
Okay. Well, that's something I think that's really new to all of us, and really that's an interesting chapter to be read. How about a safety marriage? Money can buy you happiness?
Well, again, people have been marrying for financial security for years, and what we're saying is, why do we make people wrong who need to do that or want to do that? One of the biggest game changers that I saw in my practice was the Great Recession, where people had to get creative with just finding housing. And so I had one client who, you know, she had been divorced for a couple of months, and she then set out to find a new husband, and because she didn't want to live with her parents anymore or be homeless. And within 6 months, she had a new last name. And, you know, of course, the reaction that we have now is, oh, my God, you know, that's not right. And then when you stop to think about it, it's why?
Why?
You know,
yeah.
I mean, why is it?
Why is it not right if it works for them? And
certainly
they're not hurting anyone. And it sounds like, I mean, you know, most of the time on a safety marriage, it's pretty obvious of why someone's getting married. So there's no hidden anything, I would imagine, right?
Right. And if it's okay with them and they are open about it, there's no hidden agenda. We're just saying, why can't that happen
Right. And also, Shannon, you know, the Pew Research Center interviews people on reasons for getting married. Well, of course, love is number one, but financial stability is number six.
Mm.
So clearly, people are acknowledging that there's something about financial stability as being an important. So why couldn't it be the number one or the number two reason? It absolutely could, but people feel a little embarrassed about that,
right,
because it seems wrong
to
marry that way. But if the couple, as Susan said, going into it, agrees, this is what we are doing, there's nothing wrong about that
at all. No, listen, I agree. And at certain points in your life, you have different reasons for getting married.
Absolutely.
You know, 25 is a very different reason than getting married at 55.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, 55, you might want to marry because you want a companion relationship. I mean, which is very fair. And somewhere in the middle, if you're having children, you have a parenting marriage. And that, you know, I know you mentioned the recession. I know many people that stayed together, not because they were really happy in the marriage, but because they could not afford to leave the house or the apartment. Certainly in New York City, this happens all the time. So they stayed together for the kids and they worked it out. So it became a very doable relationship. Is that something you can go into, not just find yourself working out a parenting marriage?
You'd be surprised, Shannon. In our research, we found that there are actually websites that people can find a partner to parent with.
Hmm.
Once again, we are advocating marriage. People can certainly live together and have a child, but the protections are not there. So we're saying, what if you went into the marriage saying, we're going to have three kids, and when those kids are out of the house, then we can go our separate ways. But our job in this relationship is to raise three healthy kids. And a lot of the research says that kids don't need their parents to be in love with each other. They need parents who love them and who are there for them and have a stable environment. So if you do take the love aspect out of the equation, what research has found is that there are more stable relationships. What a concept.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I you know, the research is very clear on this. Children do better in a two-parent marriage or a family home. I mean, as opposed to divorce. And certainly divorce happens, and I think it's great that we can get divorced. But if you can stay together for the children and work it out amicably, there's no question that it's better for the children. I mean, you know, many people will say we weren't in love, we didn't want our children. I have a friend that got divorced and said, I did not want my children to see that we weren't happily in love. And I said, I don't think kids care as long as you don't fight.
That's right. It's the parents fighting that is actually doing the harm. So you can stay in a marriage and fight and do more harm than you would if you went your separate ways but could co-parent amicably.
Right, and part of what we're saying in the parenting marriage is if you remove the romantic love and all of the expectations and frustrations that often come with being in love with someone, and just have a respectful, kind, and, you know, generous relationship with someone who is parenting well, your children, who's being a good parent, you are modeling something really actually very wonderful for your kids, and
they are
not getting a bad message. It's much healthier than a relationship that's
it's a partnership.
Fighting.
That's right.
It's a partnership with a common goal that's a very important goal.
Exactly.
And I think that's really important. And personally, I mean, I've studied, you know, in graduate school, I studied family policy a lot. And one of the things that there's very clear, as I said, that children do better in a home. And society does better when people are committed to the home. That means they're committed to the neighborhood, the community, the school.
Right.
You know, so there's a ripple effect to that. So, the new trend of having children without a partner is really not really good for the whole country. So looking at something like your book that gives you alternatives so you don't have to go in the paradigm that your parents and grandparents went into. And as I said, you know, feared many of us that grew up in divorce that it was going to be a landmine. You can change it to make it work for you.
It's already changing.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's true. And you clearly point that out. I mean, it's already changing. People are just saying, no, I'm not doing it the old way. But I think we can't really throw out the baby with the bathwater here either. You know, I mean, we can't say it doesn't work, as I said, especially if you're having a family. I think it can be important. And open marriage, I mean, that's a very clear one, and people know what that means. But I see a lot of downsides in that, too. Are there downsides in all of these to some degree?
Well, yeah, of course there are. And we're really careful in the book, which is not an advice book, to list the pros and cons. And these are pros and cons that not only are based from science, that research that we read, but research that we did, and also conversations with people who are actually living those kinds of marriages. So, yeah, of course, there are downsides to everything. And open marriage really scares people. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, we don't have any healthy models of open marriages or consensual non-monogamy. When we talk about non-monogamy, we talk about it either in terms of affairs, so it's deceptive and it's hurtful, or we talk about it in terms of promiscuity. We don't have, you know, any celebrity couples or just big models of making an open marriage work. And if they are having an open marriage, they still tend to keep it very secretive, because people to say, well, why even get married if you're not going to have sex with each other? And they're kind of missing the point. What we're hoping that people do, we're not advocating that you go out and have an open marriage, but we are hoping people talk about monogamy. We don't really talk about monogamy. Mm. We just assume it, instead of realizing this is a choice, and it's a choice that you really have to make every day. And you have to ask yourself, well, are we good at it? Mm. And also, why are we choosing it? And so if that conversation happens, maybe we won't see such high rates of infidelity, because we all know that that happens. No matter what we say about monogamy, there's a lot of people cheating, and mm-hmm. that's very hurtful.
So it is very hurtful.
Let's be more honest about
it. Unless you go in it maybe knowing that. I mean, I got married in Italy 20 years ago, and one of the things that they said to my husband is, you know, you can kind of do what you want, because Italy feels very differently.
As long
as you raise the children, you know, that they come first and you raise them, you can kind of do what you want. I mean, they said this to the guy. They called him down and said, you know, you don't have to put everything in her name if you don't want. And, you know, we were American. We were like, what? I mean, you know, so they go in there very differently. You know, they see it very differently for the guys. But they say you get to make this agreement the way it works for you. Now, I'm not necessarily advocating that, but there's certainly very something really good about advocating what works for you and the marriage and talking it out.
You're bringing up a great point that we talk about in the book as well, and that is that people marry differently in all
different countries,
parts of the world.
Yeah.
And throughout history, marriage has looked very different than it does today.
Absolutely.
And we're so stuck on this one model. And
the American model. Unfortunately, I would love to keep talking. We only have about a few seconds here. So I just want to remind everybody, everything is on Shannon's Corner. Your website is there. Just click right to it so you can get the book, read more about you guys. The book is The New I Do, Reshaping Marriage for Skeptics, Realists, and Rebels. Thank you both for joining us today. Terrific book. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks much, Shannon.
Thank you. Everybody, we have to wrap it up for today. But until next time, don't forget to make good.